all the different diversity of people is very exciting to be a part of. And one of my lines I love to highlight is Kipling's line, where the strength of the wolf is the pack and the strength of the pack is the wolf. I mean, that is absolutely the case. We all have to come together and work on behalf of the business community of Illinois, because we all love the land of Lincoln. We all love the state of Illinois, and we have to work together to keep it here and keep it strong.
Welcome to the DuPage Business Beat, a podcast about today's biggest business issues told from a Chicagoland perspective. Hello, Chicagoland. Welcome to the DuPage Business Beat. I'm Greg Bedloff, President and CEO of Choose DuPage, and your host for today's podcast. Today, we're here to talk about the Illinois economy, where it is today, what it might look like tomorrow, and how national trends are impacting local and state businesses. To help me unpack these issues, I'm joined by two guests from the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, Lou Sandoval, President and CEO, and Dan Wagner, Chairman of the Board. In addition to leading the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, Lou is also a director on a corporate board, a board advisor to several startups, a business founder, an entrepreneur, and just in case that wasn't enough, Lou is also a published author. Dan, meanwhile, is the Senior Vice President of Government Relations for the Inland Real Estate Group of Companies. He serves as Vice Chair of the Greater Oak Brook Chamber of Commerce and as a board member for the Civic Federation of Chicago. He's also active in the United States Chamber of Commerce and a proud board member of Choose DuPage. Dan and Lou, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate being here.
It's an honor to be here with the incredible Greg Bedloff.
Thank you very much for those kind words. Before we get started on the economy, Lou, take me through your background a little bit. Holy cow, business, founder, startups, entrepreneur, and now at the Illinois Chamber.
So I'm the example of the path least traveled. You know, if there's some place that you can go and not have it be, you know, the traditional path, that's me. You know, it's interesting because if I broke my career down in thirds, the first third was in corporate America. The middle third was in entrepreneurship and interests of my own. And this last third has been in a variety of different buckets, being a technology advisor to large companies, but then pivoting into association work here with the chamber, and then still remaining with my interests in that technical end of things. But it's really, I mean, whether I was in corporate, whether I was in my own businesses, and whether I was advising on behalf of my clients, I've always advocated for business. So this is a natural crossing ground for me in being able to do this now writ large for the over 3,000 businesses that are chamber members.
That's fantastic. I'm diverse and varied path to landing at the Illinois Chamber. And Dan, as the chairman of the Illinois Chamber, I know you and I go back, and whether it's Oak Brook or Choose DuPage or just DuPage County in general, National Association of Realtors, passion of yours to get involved in this kind of stuff. What kind of brought you here?
Well, it's interesting. I have the opportunity to work for the Inland Real Estate Group of Companies, and our philosophy, we're founded by four Chicago public school teachers, and they always are interested in education and promoting things in the community. And so my job, what I tell everybody, I'm the Tom Sawyer of Inland. My job is to get all of our associations to paint the fence for us at the local, state, and national level. So I'm getting Choose DuPage to keep DuPage a wonderful place to live and work and raise a family for Inland. And then the same with the Oak Brook Chamber and working for, you know, at the Illinois level, and then of course at the national level. But we are excited to see and be a part of the Illinois Chamber with Lou. Is a very unusual person to, in a good way, Lou, a very unusual person to be able to be leading us this state association, where this personal experiences with business and being entrepreneurial philosophies are really the thing, the hallmark, I think, of the chamber. We call it Chamber 2.0 now, with Lou and bringing the staff together in a really unprecedented way. We're pretty excited to at the Illinois Chamber right now.
Yeah. And thanks for the Tom Sawyer reference. For our younger listeners, you might have to check your history books to see who Tom Sawyer actually is, and the painting the fence reference. I think Dan just gave all of our younger listeners a homework assignment for tonight, which we always
Google it.
They'll Google it, Dan. Exactly. They won't read it. Let's talk about the markets in Illinois for a minute, Lou and Dan, and really those markets that are prime for growth, because this is the DuPage Business Beat. several of our previous episodes have talked about the changing landscape of DuPage County. I tell people all the time, when you think about DuPage, you think about companies like Inland, you think about the 88 corridor, you think about our office parks, you think about kind of the white collar, beige collar workforce that had been out here for so many decades. And it's changing as the state changes, as industries change. And we have areas in DuPage where we're seeing growth that you never really would have thought of. Data centers, transportation, distribution, logistics, warehousing. What are you seeing in Illinois at the state level where we're primed for growth and maybe some areas where you're seeing some changes as well?
Well, I think there's a couple of key areas. There's obviously, you know, as an evolved economy where services are still continue to be this like overeminent thing that especially we'll call it the local retail level, you're seeing still a lot of services and products. That is a huge area. But, you know, writ large, you're looking at a huge tech forward, you know, type of market that's happening. And by tech forward, I mean, you know, whether it's the IQMP, you know, the Quantum Center that's happening in the southeast side of Chicago, and that's going to have, we'll call it a ripple effect for the entire region. But, you know, you mentioned this, Greg, you know, the data centers, you know, as artificial intelligence becomes, as it continues to become the forefront of every major business, it's going to require places to store that data, and that's going to require energy. So I think you're seeing the myriad of that here in DuPage County. If you go just down the, you know, either down the I-88 corridor, you'll see a lot of different names. You know, you see OEMs, you see energy companies, you see healthcare. I mean, that is, if just by the logos on the buildings as you go down 88, it is a sampling of the who's who in our state's economy. And so those are the key areas: tech, energy, healthcare, and with the aging of America, healthcare is going to become even more prominent.
Who would have thought that as recently as 10, 15 years ago that we would be focusing on those markets right now, as opposed to law firms and accounting firms and consulting services and the things that we're seeing in Chicago with the LaSalle Street TIF, right, and hybrid work. But maybe, Dan, can you speak to whether it's at Inland or any of the other organizations that you serve on, where you're seeing some of these changes and the impact that you think it's having on the Illinois business community?
Absolutely. Everybody knows when you take a look at your tertiary malls. I mean, just the, you know, not the Oak Brook Mall, but the other, you know, other malls, it's very, very much within changing demographics of what people or what they do with purchasing, and with the Amazon and people buying things from home, you're seeing a lot of the malls are now being torn down and turned into lifestyle centers with apartments. And you just look at Yorktown Mall, my gosh, the amount of apartments there and Dave & Buster's and the experience of being able to shop is still there, but also really the lifestyle world is a big deal. When you look at like Inland, we have 1,400 employees, great deal of those employees work managing properties all around the country, and the folks coming into Inland every day is a much smaller footprint. So everybody takes a look at what we need to do to possibly shrink those footprints. What do you do to maximize the space that you're in? And across, you know, the country, not just, you know, DuPage, that's a big push. It's happening.
So let's talk about the ecosystem of economic development and the ecosystem of the business community within the state of Illinois, inclusive of the Illinois Chamber, because the Chamber is a loud voice for business and a professional voice for business advocacy. You've been in the role for some time now. What's your thoughts on how Illinois is doing with the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, Intersect Illinois? You may be familiar that Choose DuPage is part of the Greater Chicagoland Economic Partnership, kind of a regional collaboration up here in northeastern Illinois. But what's your thoughts on how we're doing from an ecosystem perspective?
Well, it's interesting coming from, you know, the business side of things, you know, and I love to say that, you know, in business, when we look at fixing things, it's a little different from the policy side, which, you know, kind of happens in the political sense. You know, when you hire a person to fix something in business, you know, let's just say a plumber to fix a leak, mm-hmm, it's fixed, right? Mm-hmm. only in the political world does lobbying allow something to be partially fixed, you know, and then sold as a panacea, you know. And so that's probably been one of the biggest adjustments. But when I look at the overall ecosystem, I think it's important for businesses to be aligned. We like to say it's – I call it the pyramid of the triangle of trust, you know, for the business community. At one point is the Illinois Chamber. At another point is your local chamber. And then the professional associations. All three of those form that triangle of support for the businesses who sit in the middle.
When you say professional associations, IMA,
your trade associations.
Okay.
Exactly. And because all of them have different levels of expertise. You know, 90% of politics is local, so you need to be involved in your local chamber. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your trade association understands the nuances of your specific industry.
Sure.
And the state chamber, you know, focuses on, you know, the overall overarching. Because, you know, where the Illinois Chamber sits on this, our members are – We're agnostic, you know, with regards to, you know, sector. We're agnostic to region. We're agnostic to geography. And we're also agnostic to the types of businesses that we sit. You know, when we look at the state chamber, about 35% of our businesses are the – who'd you would expect, the who's who, the top Fortune 500. But then 65% are your mid-cap, small-cap, and then what I call your small businesses. And in that smaller percent of those small businesses are – your different chambers. Of the 258 chambers in the state, about 188 of them are members of the state chamber.
Oh, great.
So we create an
so you have an ecosystem of your own.
Of its own that, you know, as we kind of we push messaging down and to the arteries, to capillaries,
mm-hmm.
you know, we basically get out to the nuances of, you know, Anytown USA in the state and to the little businesses there. That's been very instrumental in advocating for those businesses, because when you get into things like tip wage, you know, or different issues such as that, you know, we're able to get that message down to the capillary, mm-hmm. into those small businesses that might not otherwise travel to Springfield to speak up.
And Lou, you've been down to Marion. I mean, you talk about right. You've been all over the state of Illinois.
Yeah, that's been one of the things that we intentionally designed, you know, and that's part of the Chamber 2.0 message, you know, is really getting away from having the Chamber be so central Illinois focused, you know, and having it be so, you know, balancing the approach to, you know, understand that it's employers and employees, and then also in a nonpartisan fashion. You know, I grew up in Chicago. I've, you know, been a Chicago resident for the majority of my life. And, you know, we haven't had a Republican mayor since 1931. But that's that therein lies, you know, so growing up, I've learned to kind of work with those that get stuff done, you know, and that's not blue. I mean, and that's, I'd say this to legislators all the time. There are, show me the blue and the red businesses in your district. And they're like, they look at you like, what do you mean? I said, exactly. I said, there aren't any. I said, what there are is writ large businesses in your district.
So how does the chamber then balance what might be perceived as a traditionally blue part of the state versus a traditionally red part of the state? Do the businesses, I always say the color most businesses care about is green, because
right.
they're
yeah,
trying to
exactly.
make money.
That's exactly the party of green and the party of dead presidents is what I say, you know,
right.
I said basically on the green.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really where it's focusing on the issues and the issues that impact local areas the most. Having grown up on the southeast side of Chicago and my mom's house, the house that I grew up in is walking distance to the IQMP.
I thought you were going to say it's walking yeah. distance to the new Pope's house for a
no,
minute there.
No,
I thought
no.
you were going to.
No, but I know a lot of people that know
sure.
the Pope.
Okay. So, but walking distance to the new IQMP, which
yep.
is a big deal for the state of Illinois.
Exactly. And my dad worked on that land for 41 years as a steel worker. So, you know, I that land fed my house, you know,
mm-hmm.
for a long time. The business that stood on that land fed my house. But I also understand what happened in 1993 when, you know, all of it kind of went away. 18,000 jobs evaporated, and that side of Chicago's struggled to regain its footing since then. But as I travel different parts of the state, I understand exactly how policy impacts areas. And this is why I think that we can't pick winners and losers in this bag. Everybody always says, oh, you know, populism says, oh, let the big guys pay. You know, well, when the big guys pay and they have options. And they have options to reduce their footprint in an area of resistance and go to an area of least resistance. And when they do that, the suppliers hurt, the daycare centers and the coffee shops to where the employees went to work hurt, and the real estate hurts, you know?
And throw throw in hybrid working and remote working on top of a scenario like that, and now you have some serious financial repercussions associated with that.
Well, and talking to the chamber leaders from around the state that are especially at the border chambers of the cities, it is very difficult when you have legislation passed in Springfield that forgets about competition, where people can businesses can go right, you know, a mile across the line and open up business there. And we have to always be there to remind legislators of this. And I think that's one of the great things about Lou and the team at the chamber. They're able to really educate members of the General Assembly who are well-meaning folks, but they might not be aware of how their idea is going to impact business and how it could hurt business.
Well, an existing sales dollar from your private sector days, and you know this, Dan, an existing sales dollar is worth four times a new sales dollar because of the amount of work that you have to put in to go get that new sales dollar.
Yeah. And Greg, I don't believe that there's, you know, my personal view on this is that I don't believe there's malintended or malice intended with policymaking. You know, I feel that it's an opportunity to educate. You know, we've coined this term called advocation, meaning that it's a combination of advocacy and education of those. Because when I've sat down in Springfield, I see a lot of well-intended legislators but many of them haven't come up through the business ranks. You know, you tell them $50 million top line business, their eyes light up. Oh, they're rolling the dough. But then when you break it down for them in a P&L sheet and you show them, oh, this is where your insurance costs are, this is where your human capital costs are, and then add a 9% EBITDA, this is the bottom line. They're like, oh, that's not a lot of money, is it? And I said, exactly.
Add risk to that and add the entrepreneurial spirit and the startup costs and everything else. And I jokingly say from time to time that very few businesses have a money printing machine in their warehouse. It's really human capital and intellectual capabilities and everything else that helps make those businesses grow and thrive. Yeah. So as we're recording this, we're a few days away from the end of session in Springfield. What are you hearing? What's on the horizon down in Springfield for the business community and things that could have an impact on the business?
They're not going to raise taxes, are they, Lou?
You know what? We're in a bit of a pickle, you know, and I say this because, you know, you've heard the talking points, 9 credit upgrades, 6 balanced budgets. You know, anybody that's paying attention that understands a P&L and says, you know, your revenue is here, but your expenditures are here and your liabilities are there, says, all right, that doesn't really math out, does it? You know, and I think that's where we're at on a couple of different issues. And you know, I was talking to a business leader yesterday, for example, and they're like, you know, do you understand that, you know, what's being proposed in healthcare omnibus bill right now is a $15.50 head tax on every one of my employees because of how we manage our healthcare policy. You know, and again, these are all unintended consequences that when the government picks winners and losers, it has the business community, you know, and it's never, and we're seeing this right now on a couple of bills where they want carve outs for organized labor. You know, so if it's not good enough for them, then why is it good for everyone else? You know, because the unbalance in that happens, that business ends up picking it up, the small mom and pop shops. And I'll give you an example of this just here, and this is my own polling. So we've got this tip wage experiment that happened in Chicago, okay? I love doing my own micro polling whenever I go out to eat. I'll ask servers, you know, some of them are Hispanics, we'll speak in Spanish. And I'll say, hey, how many days a week are you working in Chicago? And they're like, oh, only 2 days a week because I want to be close to home on those days. I said, well, where else are you working? Well, I'm working out at Oak Brook or out in DuPage County, you know, at a restaurant. And I said, well, why is that? Because there I can make $60 an hour. Here I'm capped at 15. And a lot of times people won't tip because they, you know, because we've eliminated that. So again, this is where policy pushes and picks winners and losers. So when you go at policy, you know, people will find the path of least resistance. It becomes regressive for those that can't travel, you know, and that's where people get hurt. That's where households get hurt. I call it circular inflation. You know, so yeah, you raise it $15 an hour minimum wage, but that cost gets passed on to the consumer. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, every time we look at policy coming out of whether it's Springfield or Washington, we have to look at what is the impact to the average household, you know? And if they're, you know, like right now, one of the things that's being bandied around is a professional services tax on luxury issues such as, you know, and I don't think this is a luxury because many of us use these, you know, dry cleaners, hair salons, nail salons, you know, services that many people utilize to fund a deficit that was created through overspending, you know. And when you look at that, that's going to be a tax on the average Joe, okay? Well, it might not be a property tax. Now your cost of living is going up a relative amount. And that's where we have to look as taxpayers. We have to look at the policy that's being rolled out and how it's going to impact it. Pocketbook issues matter.
Sure. No,
I can't.
Well, people vote their pocketbook ostensibly at the end of the day.
They should. But, you know, politicians are very adept at, you know, confusing the situation with social issues, you know? But it's really the pocketbook issues. I mean, we saw this in the national elections, you know. Now it's still playing out, but, you know, you can't be told that you feel one way or you should feel one way, and yet at the same time, you don't feel any better than you did previously. And I think that for Illinoisans right now, a lot of them are waking up to the cold hard facts of, you know what, my cost of living's here, you know? There's a guy that I'm going to riff a little bit longer. I don't want to go on a filibuster, but there's a guy a book that I'm reading right now called Abundance by Ezra Klein. And it's an interesting book for capitalists at heart. Many people are going to say, you're quoting Ezra Klein. But, you know, I love to read things that kind of challenge my way of thinking. Because I don't want to think I have all the answers. And Ezra Klein does a really interesting job. He criticizes equally both sides of the aisle. And he says, listen, let's take the issue of housing. Up and down the West Coast, Chicago, you know, from San Diego to Seattle, Chicago, New York, housing, highest cost of living areas. Cost of acquiring a home is through the roof in those areas. And on top of that, highest amount of homelessness. Mm-hmm. He goes, so tell me how housing is working in those blue areas, you know? Mm-hmm. He goes, criticizes the Republican side of it all and saying, hey, listen, they also haven't helped the situation either in certain respects when they've been in power. So, I mean, it's real. It challenges our thinking of like red and blue. It challenges it. And this is where we've gone with the chamber. It's not about this red and blue issues. It's about, are we pro-growth? Are we pro-business and are we pro-Illinois? And so when we talk to legislators, that's how we scale them. Are they pro-growth? Are they pro-business? And are they pro-Illinois? If they are, we're dancing.
Okay.
If we're challenged in any one of those areas, all right.
So when you say pro-growth, do you mean growth in the business community, helping businesses grow? Are we talking about population growth? Give me a little more.
It is helping because economics impact a lot of different things.
Of course. That's where I was going with this question. It's easy to say I'm pro-growth, right. But if you don't have the labor force, and let's face it, Lou, we just don't have
the labor.
You're a Southeast side guy. I'm a Southwest side guy. Not mm-hmm. uncommon for us as kids growing up to be down the street from a family that had 9, 10 kids.
That's not happening anymore.
Go find us one of those families these days, and that affects the labor market. And I think we had a podcast about a year ago. There's a bigger issue at play here, and that is just that we just are not growing the population as quickly as we used to, as recently as maybe one or two generations ago. And I'm just curious, when you say pro-growth and being willing to dance with legislators who are pro-growth, my assumption is pro-growth in the sense of policies that make sense to help these businesses grow their business.
Exactly. And really for it all, I mean, this is something every business person learns. Every entrepreneur learns day one of having their businesses. It's easier to keep a customer that you have happy than to go out and try to acquire a new one,
Amen.
Okay? And that's – so let's apply that to businesses in the state, okay? We've got people that are part of the revenue base already, okay? Up and down the economic scale. We should equally be looking for opportunities to keep them all engaged and succeeding in our state. That comes down to the policy that drives that, taxation, you know, the opportunities for them to grow and thrive. Mm-hmm. But when we over-legislate and over-bureaucratize things, it makes it difficult. Because I'll tell you, like on paid leave, and there are a lot of companies that are already doing that, but they're not being given credit for the great things they do. They're being criticized as if they're doing wrong. Okay, so there isn't the carve-out for them in that respect.
Sure.
I said, but on paid leave alone, if we can't align policy between the County of Cook, the City of Chicago, the County of Cook, and the State of Illinois, companies are having to navigate, who am I following today, running afoul of today? And if a large corporation with a 50-person HR team is having a tough time, navigating that, you can only imagine what a small and medium-sized business is experiencing in that, because they don't have an HR team. It's sometimes the owner.
Who's the HR manager and production manager and everything else.
Janitor.
Chief cook and bottle washer.
Exactly. Where's the chamber coming down on these days? What are you hearing regarding transit? We talk in DuPage. It's so important to our economy out here. And everything from first and last mile, we have incredible train stations throughout Wheaton and Downers Grove and up and down both of our main commuter lines that come through here. But there's bigger issues at play with transit in general. Where's the chamber coming down on transit, really, as it pertains to the burbs as well, Luke?
Yeah, I'm hearing that, we have been at the table with both the Senate Working Group. I've testified in front of that, worked with the House Working Group as well, where we've been very intricately involved in a lot of that. But at the same time, we've been very clear. We need governance. But, I think that the system writ large needs to be safe. It needs to be reliable, and it needs to be efficient. And I want to add another aspect of it. It needs to be asynchronous,
Oh, gosh.
Because we're like sliding doors right now. All these different, the four agencies are doing, from procurement to who they contract, the apps, none of it talks. They're sliding doors. And that is, from a customer experience perspective, horrible.
But I would also think that seamless integration that you talked about not only is a better customer experience, but it seems to me it would save the agency's money as well.
That the emotional side also says, as a customer, I lose trust in a product that I can't rely on, right? You stop relying on it. And that's why we see congestion. That's why we see, and that has its own impact, You see it in the roadways. You see congestion. You see the expressways right now. And then you add construction.
These are all heavy lifts. I totally get it. And, taking off the Choose DuPage hat as a citizen, I understand that. And I always, when I was at the tollway, people used to say, gosh, the tollway typically just runs so seamlessly and doesn't seem to be a lot of traffic. And I'd say, well, sometimes. But the other thing you got to remember is the tollway is typically systems that are going around something, and the majority of our roads dead end into Lake Michigan.
Right.
So there's always going to be congestion when your road stops at a body of water. It's never going to be a perfect system.
Or runs parallel to it.
Or runs parallel to it. Yeah, there's just going to be those inherent issues that happens. So
don't you think safety also is an issue that people are talking about with our transportation?
Absolutely. Safety is an issue everywhere for everybody. And I think that, in DuPage, to your point earlier, we've always prided ourselves on making sure we have as safe a community as we can possibly have. It's a big issue. Are you guys is the chamber touching on that in terms of what you're looking at with Springfield?
We've heard it. We've heard it dead center, and we're on that one as well. And that's part of the governance reform. There's a lot of that. It should be – I ride the CTA in Chicago, and I can tell you that when I've jumped on, whether it's the red line, the green line, or the blue line, you see a variety of different things that you would never see. I've ridden the train in New York. And I've gone from the Bronx to downtown. I've gone from Princeton into downtown, and not a problem. I feel safe. But they also collaborate there. You've got the National Guard, you've got the Transit Police, the Port Authority. They all work together, and they're visually present on the platforms, on the trains.
It's important.
And that's, I think, right now, it's like, it's the four agencies, everybody's pointing a finger going, oh, it's their job. It's their job.
We have to figure this out in Illinois, that the amount of different government agencies that exist at all different levels, the thousands and thousands of agencies that are out there with property taxes the way they are. I know that Lou has had a variety of our members contact him and talk about how they're going to have to close up shop because the taxes are killing them in Illinois. And I think property taxes are a major issue related to increasing any taxes.
That fair point, Dan, but let me be a little bit of point counterpoint here. Still the fifth largest economy in the United States of America, 19th largest economy in the world, an economy that's larger than the country of Sweden and, I believe, Poland. Somewhere around 40% of all the freight in the United States of America comes through Illinois in some way, shape, or form. What are your chamber members telling you, and with the IQMP that you mentioned and other investments, what are your chamber members telling you about their ability to make money in the state?
I think they're questioning it, you know. I think a lot of focus has been put on the new shiny, let's bring new business in. Mm-hmm. But not enough has been focused on the different economic spectra of mid-cap, small-cap, and small business. You know, we have edge grants. That's great. That works up to a certain revenue amount. But what about the small, medium-sized guys? You know, how do we help them become more successful? Because policy that rolls downhill to the least common denominator sometimes has – the further it rolls down the hill, sure, the more mass it creates, yeah, and the harder the impact to that small business.
So what are some ideas that the chamber or your members have kicked around for – when you say small, I'm assuming you're talking mom-and-pop, Main
mom
Street
and pop, yeah,
businesses
of
25 –
below $25 million.
Okay. What are we looking at there? Well, ways to incentivize them or ways to help them grow?
We've tendered proposals for economic empowerment zones, and this helps with some of the property tax issues that we have. Because, you know, in areas like Southland, for example, you know, there's an imbalance. There's been not enough investment. There's been a disinvestment in certain areas. So you don't have the businesses in the area to offset the residential property tax load. I mean, short of shrinking the size of government, which was one of the points Dan was making, you got to kind of regulate it, right? So is there enough industry to balance off the property taxes? You know, is it shared equally between residential and commercial? And that right now in some parts of the state is not the case. You know, Dan also
I can't argue that. I don't think anybody could argue that. And that's a big challenge.
So it's how do we carve out some of those areas that are seeing triple digit property tax increases and offset that with an incentive for the businesses to go there, establish and grow, you know?
Just love this kind of conversation. Right. I could literally sit here all day talking about it. Lou, it's been my experience that economic incentives are rounding errors on the balance sheet of a business making a decision on where to locate. They're good faith gestures. Right. They're welcome mats. They are, we really want you here, and here's how we're displaying that, and here's how we're
showing
their conversation starters. But I'm always afraid, maybe this is just me, I'm always afraid that if you earn a piece of business on price, you buy business on price, you're going to lose business on price. And I worry that that becomes a race to the bottom, because if I'm throwing 20 cents on the dollar at a $25 million company to locate in DuPage County, what's to stop somebody from offering 30 cents on the dollar or 35 cents on the dollar? And again, I'm a capitalist too, and they have every right to do that if they want to, but I worry about the ultimate outcome there.
So Greg, we're dancing around the issue, you know, because I mean, the real issue is actually why, I mean, I get, you always want to put a good deal on the table to bring somebody in, to bring them to the table to talk.
Yeah.
All right. But at the end of the day, you know, and that's the and strategy, okay? Because, and you should be doing, that's your attraction of new business. But if you're not doing it for the businesses that are here and they're not growing, because that's your base. That's your base.
Right.
And those are the guys that, you know, they don't.
How do we help them expand?
How do we facilitate
that business to look at the South Suburbs or the West Side or anywhere in DuPage County with an additive process?
And they've helped build the state. They've helped build these areas.
So I had one guy stand up in a talk that I did once, and I forget which part of the state it was. And he's like, you know what I feel like? He goes, remember the days of cable? When, you know, you would go every month and renegotiate your contract because the new guy's getting a $69.99 deal and you're paying $100 a month.
Or cell phones.
Or cell phones. Right, right. And he's like, he goes, that's how I feel as a business. The new guys are getting the deals. But what about me who has been here carrying the freight for the state?
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think, how a lot of business, they do feel then also that they're being legislated against sometimes with some of the policy that rolls downhill. And that's, you know, they're not the ones that are going to go. They're not going to file a WARN notice because sometimes they're not big enough to fall under that criteria.
Right.
They're just going to eat the margin kill, or they're going to shut their doors and go away. And when they shut their doors and go away, that's when communities hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, you know, I love to say that, you know, there's this discussion in the state house. Oh, you can't have employees without employers. And I'm like, well, you can't have employers without employees. It's a balancing act. But at the same time, if employers hurt, employees hurt, communities hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to make it so they all – that we win economically and the rising tide lifts all ships,
Amen.
Pun intended. But that to the point of it's an and strategy. You got to grow and focus on – there's a thing in business school where they teach you. You got to focus on your core business, okay? What is your core business? And you got to drive business development. And it's that and that I think we're broken on right now. There isn't enough of the and.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. So Dan Inland does business all over the country.
All over the country.
Are you guys worldwide now, or do we?
No,
have, we, not yet. You haven't jumped any of the water borders.
Our philosophy is to stick in the United States.
Okay,
we've purchased real estate in every state except Alaska. So there you go.
And I'm sure that every deal is looked at individually. You got a bunch of experts who are analyzing every deal.
Yes.
You're headquartered here in DuPage. Thank you for being headquartered.
Inland loves Illinois.
And Inland loves Illinois. And how are you guys looking at some of the issues we're talking about with Illinois versus?
Sure.
Because it's always the easy question, right? And I drive through Indiana and parts of Michigan.
You're not going to like my answer.
I drive through these states and I think selfishly, a large of their economy exists because of Illinois.
And Chicago.
Putting that aside and my hometown pride for a second, and it's fine if I don't like the answer. How are you seeing the inland investment dollars being sprinkled throughout the country right now using Illinois as kind of a baseline?
So inland used to be the largest landlord in Chicago. We had 48,000 apartments. At this moment, we have 100 apartments and we're looking at selling those. The difficulty with managing apartments, our goal is to try to securitize commercial real estate for people to retire with the returns of how we manage the properties and do the best we can. But our leadership saw that Chicago was turning more progressive and anti-landlord. And so when you're trying to manage properties for people to be able to retire on that investment, it just gets too up and down where you have property taxes that we've seen triple, and you can't have those kind of big swings with these kind of investments.
So I'm hearing tax certainty. We hear that a lot on this podcast, that business likes predictability, business likes certainty. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that level of certainty to the extent that you can, it's a headwind that many times businesses that have the ability to invest in other places.
And Greg, the other thing that happens to the business community is we have, again, as we talked about earlier, well-meaning elected officials that come up with the coolest bills they could ever think of. They're the most progressive things. And while sometimes those bills don't pass, Lou is in the marine world. He's a sailor. Those are telltale signs of where the wind's blowing.
So what else is the chamber working on, Lou? What's on the docket as Chamber 2.0 continues to evolve for the rest of 2025 and beyond?
Well, it's interesting because on the issue that we glanced on earlier about educating advocation for legislators, in certain caucuses, I do believe that there are a lot of legislators are coming up from nonprofits or community activist arms. They don't have that business thing. So last year we piloted and this year is going to be a full on engagement of sort of what we're calling the Chamber Leadership Institute. It's a program that I would say, if you had to explain it best, it's like leadership Greater Chicago meets Edgar Fellows combined with an economic twist to it. And effectively, what I started seeing is what I mentioned, where you've got problems with legislators not understanding a P&L because they didn't come from the business world. They create policy in a vacuum because they've heard that, big business is bad, business is bad, it's greedy. So what we do is we take them through, and I've got a professor from DePaul and a professor from Northwestern that takes them through Econ 101 and Entrepreneurship 101, shows them how to read a P&L statement, And then we do a cohort visit of going and visiting a business sector. Last year, we picked technology. We went and visited the John Deere Innovation Center. And in visiting that innovation center, they're able to see the community impact that John Deere has, how they're investing, how their suppliers are picked. They're able to see it. And we intentionally picked members of the Latino and the Black Caucus to bring them out to that, to have them hear it. It just so happened that some of them were in the progressive sector, it's intentional, but it's meant to educate. It's not to criticize.
How well received has it been?
It was actually eye-opening for a lot of them, And they're like, oh, I didn't know that, I didn't know that they spent so much money in supplier diversity. I didn't know that they spent so much money. So it's an eye-opener, but it helps you understand and, create an awareness, and also has them see the impact that sector, that market sector has to the state economy.
I have to ask you, with technology, innovation, data centers, AI, I mean, we're just inundated, and we thought that the last tech boom was whatever it was. But now, I mean, clearly that wasn't even the tip of the iceberg. And I don't even know if this is the tip of the iceberg. I think when people think about chambers of commerce, especially at the local level, maybe the state level, they don't really think about those tech companies. They don't think about entrepreneurship. They don't think about innovation. I personally believe this is where our economy is going, everybody. Entrepreneurship, innovation, data security, tech. How can those businesses help the chamber? What is the chamber doing to reach out to those businesses?
The big issue, what are the big issues when you say all that? Energy, right, Lou?
Right. No, I was going to go there. The underpinning area for all of these, you can't power any of this manufacturing, any of these things without energy. And that is one of the biggest issues right now that we're – and it's also – we can't pick – again, government shouldn't pick winners and losers in this sector. You know, our state has a lot of great natural resources, coal, and we have a lot of gas. I mean, I've heard that we've got over 328,000, maybe 382,000, you know, natural gas lines in the state. You know, we're not leveraging it to our strength, you know? So at the chamber, we support an all of the above strategy because you can't just wave yourself and get into a sustainable energy future without a supply side of input. And you're going to see that hit this summer with some of the rising increases to electrical bills because we have had our eye on the goal, not the process to get there.
I always tell my friends in the businesses, yeah, you can have that strategy of being just exclusively focused on renewable, but then you can't complain when you don't get the data center and you don't get the AI because you don't have the capacity to power the data center or the AI. We've been very fortunate in DuPage, and I give the governor and his team and everybody else a ton of credit, whether it's IQMP or the CyrusOne data centers that have opened, the NTT data centers that have opened. We're seeing them. It's very organic. They're coming, whether anybody wants them or not. They're coming. ComEd and natural gas and all that kind of stuff, that's got to all be figured out, right? We're telling people, and this is certainly not a knock against ComEd or NICOR or anybody else. They can only work as fast as they can work. We're telling people 5 years now.
And they have to be at the table. That's the thing.
Yeah,
they need a seat at the table because they're part of the solution. Right now, they're being criticized as being part of the problem. But, oh, look, data centers are driving up your electrical costs. I'm like, no. It's because we've given the enviros way too much, clearance on, the outcome and have not had business at the table to create the solution.
In my mind, Lou and Dan, it's just a logical economic progression. You have a world-class city with major employers, data coming out their metaphorical ears that needs to be stored somewhere, and businesses are going this way. You're a major economic hub. You're going to need data centers. It's literally that simple.
Data centers, but unfortunately, the state of Illinois closed down the power plants that we needed. And not that we shouldn't have good, clean air, but they did it too soon. And so now we're seeing this difficulty. And now we have to try to go and reinvent things again.
Well, and as you mentioned, Greg, it's a 5-year process. What we do today, the clock starts ticking. We can't go retro on this.
No, you can't.
It's like the clock starts ticking. So that's why we're supporting energy bills for, the repealing the moratorium on nukes, because it's an all of the above strategy right now. We need all of the above.
Okay. At some point, we got to wrap this up, but maybe this will spill into two episodes. But every time you guys make a comment, it spurs another question. Ag, life sciences, tech, mom and pop, Cairo, Rockford, Chicago. I mean, our economy is just so diverse, and the pushes and pulls within those industries. Well, we got to do something to help the farmers, but if you help the farmers, you're hurting the tech people. You got to do something to help Main Street, but now you're hurting Wall Street. How does the chamber even begin to work that balance out north, south, east, west?
Farm Bureau has been a great partner
us. Yeah. So is Illinois soy and Illinois corn. That is the core of our state's economy, And so, again, it's our job's not to pick winners and losers. It's to advocate for all of the above, I don't look at the check size of, the member. I look at what their interests are and how do we navigate a solution that doesn't hurt one group and helps another, And I think we got to look at that statewide.
Yeah, but is that possible, Lou? There's got to be times when you're doing something, you're looking at a piece of legislation or you're looking at an opportunity, an incentive program, and say, this is going to help the soy people, but it's going to hurt the beef people. or this is going to help the corn growers, but it's going to hurt life sciences.
I think it can be navigated with everybody having a seat at the table and having a discussion. So that's really where I see it, you know?
The other thing that Lou just happened to be appointed to the Chicago Fed, too. So you might mention your experience with that, too.
Yeah, no, obviously, you know, sitting on a couple of large bank boards, I was just appointed to the Advisory Council of the Chicago Fed, and particularly working on agriculture, labor, and small business. That's the subcommittee that I'm on. So really, before that meeting, I got the input from our ag friends, you know, what they need, and from labor, and from, you know, from our small business community, to be able to represent their interests in terms of monetary policy. And that's critical right now at the Fed level.
And I will tell you, Greg, the interesting thing about being a part of the chambers, when you go to our chamber board meeting, you could be sitting next to somebody that runs a coal mine, somebody that runs a hospital, Caterpillar. I mean, all these, and then you have smaller companies, all the different diversity of people is very exciting to be a part of. And one of my lines I love to highlight is Kipling's line, where the strength of the wolf is the pack and the strength of the pack is the wolf. I mean, that is absolutely the case. We all have to come together and work on behalf of the business community of Illinois, because we all love the land of Lincoln. We all love the state of Illinois, and we have to work together to keep it here and keep it strong.
So, Lou, if people want to find out more about the Chamber of Commerce, the Illinois Chamber, what's the quickest way to do it?
Quickest way to do it, they can go to www.ilchamber.org or any of the social media arms. We're on all of them. So whether it's Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, you name it, we're on all of them.
Great. So that's it for today's show. Dan and Lou, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Greg.
We love Choose DuPage.
And as always, thank you to the College of DuPage for supporting today's episode. To keep up with what's happening in DuPage County and the Chicagoland region, and today the entire state of Illinois, follow Choose DuPage on social media or visit choosedupage.com. I'm Greg Bedlove. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the DuPage Business Beat.